You have questions. Find your answers at starspsychics.com.
Hello, I'm Natalie, owner of starspsychics.com. I am dedicated to providing affordable access to spiritual advisors. Here are two satisfied clients who will tell you what it's like to work with me.
Quoting Jackie.
It's a comfortable site. Everybody is so friendly. They treat you like family.
Barb added this about Natalie.
She's a kind and caring person who gives accurate readings.
You have questions? Find your answers today at starspsychics.com. That's stars with a Z, psychics.com.
Hi, everyone. This is Natalie, also known as Starscast. My guest has not called in yet, but he's calling in from another country, so you're going to have to listen to me for a few minutes. Anyways, but it's been a busy week for me. I just finished putting up the magazine, mysticlivingtoday.com. It's a big one, and I still have submissions to put in, last-minute things, which that's all about a magazine. It's not like it's printed and put on the, you know, on the shelves out there for you to buy or in the grocery store. So I have the advantage of just putting it in, making a change, copy and paste this, put the link in, check it out, and all of that. It's really, really not that tough. I have a new editor that I'm supposed to be getting, not an editor like me, but I have a new editor of program that Tony, my webmaster, is going to be putting in for me. So I'm kind of excited about that because, you know, every once in a while you think to yourself, gosh, this is so nice what I use, but I would really like to see this, this, and this. So hopefully it'll have this, this, and this for me. Anyways, I'm going to tell you a little bit about stars with a Z, psychics.com. I know everybody is going through a rough time right now. It's a difficult period. I went to the grocery store on Monday, and I wasn't mortified, but I walked around, and I saw all these people like they were afraid. Like, I mean, I had a mask on, and now in my city you have to wear a mask if you go in a public place or anything of that nature, so I'm going to turn this phone down here. Just thought about it. But anyways, that's just part of it. You have to put up with stuff as much as we don't want to, but it's such a difficult thing. It really, really is, I know. And I'm hoping all of you are being safe and being smart when you go out. Please do that. It's just you have to. It's a must. It's a necessity. My guest is still not here. Okay, so he's calling from the UK. And, you know, it's just like everything else. Things happen. People run into snags and all. I'm used to it. You know, I could probably talk the whole hour, right? But anyways, Star Psychics, I started to tell you that and I didn't finish. It's a great site. I've added, you know, one or two more readers. I kind of keep it small. At one time I had probably 150 readers on the site. But, you know, it doesn't matter if you have 5 or 10. You have to have quality, and I have quality there, and I'm very proud of all of them. They're going through a difficult time, too. You know, we're not as busy as we were. So please go to stars with a Z, psychics.com. And first time special is 10 minutes for $10. And we have a membership rate that if you purchase that at $19.95, you get 3 months, but I'm adding a fourth month. So you get 4 months for $19.95. And does give you a break on the rates per minute. So it behooves you to do that. You pay for it the first time. I mean, there's just no doubt about it. So let's see, what else could I tell you? Oh, yes, being safe around here. I'm not going anywhere, really. Might go to get my hair cut, and that's going to be about it. I'm trying to just stick in the house here, you know, and just be self. And I think I'm going to write this gentleman a quick email here and find out where he might be, okay, while we're here waiting. You can call in if you want and ask me a question. And the call-in is 347-838-9736, and I'll be happy to answer a question for you. Not a psychic question, although I do read cards. Oh, I know what I can tell you about our YouTube channel. That channel, I have the first, Candy Ranson did it, you know, she does all my marketing. She put up the first audio video on my YouTube channel, which is Stars with a Z Psychics, okay? And it's with Rena. I had her on She talked about Mary Magdalene. Well, that was the one that we could do, and now we're waiting on some additional software so Candy can do all of them. But if you go there, please subscribe, share, like, put a comment. It's a great thing. We've got quite a bit over there. I was surprised. You know, we try to do, I mean, you know, it's just, when you try to do everything, it's really, really tough. Okay, so bear with me here a moment, and I'm going to quickly send him a message, make sure he's still good to go. You know, things happen, things change, people get behind in their schedule. And I'm going to ask him, are you calling in? Let me know. And a smiley face, and I guess I should put the number there again, huh? Just by chance, you know, sometimes people, you know, you could be looking around and saying, oh, my gosh, where's the number I'm supposed to call, right? Hey, I do that sometimes. You should see what my desk is like. I've got a big appointment book, and then I've got all this other stuff. I've got pens and pencils and folders and all kinds of stuff. I got all my taxes done. Yay, happy, happy. And so that's a good thing, but I got another extension. I'm going to hold off. And, okay, I'm sending him the number to call because, like I said, sometimes people misplace it, and he's probably thinking, oh, gosh, he probably figures I'm not going to show up. I've had people say, you know, I couldn't even get through. From another country now, he's using paid Skype. I shouldn't even advertise him, but that's a way of calling in. Anywhere. You can get a month of it, and that's all you have to get, and I don't even know what it is. It's not very expensive, but you call anywhere in the world. Basically, I think it is. I think you can call anywhere. I've had people call from Rio de Janeiro. I've had people call from Brazil. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful thing. Well, I sent him this email, so let's see if I get a response. Hopefully, I will. I don't know. Called in the wrong number. Oh. See? Told you. Yeah, it must be psychic, right? Oh, he just reversed the numbers. He just reversed the numbers. 3-8. Mm-hmm. There we go. Okay, let's see if he does it. He dialed the wrong number, so somebody answered and didn't know who I was. No, he just put in one wrong number. That's all it takes. So he should be calling in any moment now. But anyways, I've been pretty busy. But like I said, I haven't gone out. You know, I go outside the backyard. Oh, if you go to my Instagram at Star Psychics, you'll see the little doe that comes to visit myself and my neighbor. Oh, she's just so beautiful. You know, she was near my front porch. I looked out to start up, you know, I kind of start up the computer and the tower and the monitors, and I looked out the window and I saw this beautiful, oh my gosh, how beautiful. Here he is. We got him. Hold on. Jeff.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine. I saw you just put in a one wrong number. I'm sorry if I sent you the wrong number, but I've been talking away for, I don't know, 5 minutes or something, talking to I don't know who. But anyways, how are you today?
I'm good. I just rang somebody random in America twice. I'm here now.
Well, I want to introduce you. This is Jeff Thompson. I don't even know where to begin with him. He's a writer. I think he's written, 37 books, Jeff? Is that right?
It's near 50 now, yeah.
Oh, 50! Oh, my gosh! Oh, well, we're going to talk about that. But he didn't start off this way. I mean, you know, everybody says, oh, my gosh, how do you do this? He's a British Academy of Film and Television Arts. He won that. He's a filmmaker. You have a Wikipedia. I was so impressed. I don't think I've ever interviewed anybody that has a Wikipedia. You're famous.
When you're in the middle of all the output, I don't think you notice you know, you suddenly look back at your CV and you think, oh, yeah, there's 50 books there, and there's, you know, there's about 12 films, and it's about, I think I've done 4 stage plays. I did a musical last year as well. And you just, you're so in the middle of it, you don't, it doesn't really feel different. I never, ever feel as though I've done enough. And then, of course, when you look at it from the perspective of somebody else, you realise how it looks. But as you said, I'm an ordinary guy. I was working in a factory sweeping floors until I was 32, so my first book was published. But I'd always wanted to write. But it's, so it's there for everybody. That potential is there. You just have to believe it is, don't you?
Well, you know, everybody that I've interviewed, I mean, I've interviewed some singers, so they don't apply to this, but all the other ones, they've all wanted to write since they were young.
That's true for me.
Yeah. So I don't know. Maybe that's genetic. I don't know. But like for me, I have a fairy tale that I cannot seem to put on paper. It's in my head. But I didn't want to write when I was a little girl. I loved reading a lot. I read a lot. So maybe that's the offhand of it. Maybe you're either a reader or you love to write, or I love to think, and I had this imagination, and I daydreamed, and so I guess maybe one day I'll do it. But tell us from the very beginning how you got started. I mean, your career, wait till you hear this man's career. You're not going to believe this, because I have never, I have 6 pages on you of everything that you've accomplished, Jeff. And you have a beautiful accent. And you should see his emails to me. They are just so nice. They make you feel so good. So go ahead. Tell us how you got started. I mean, as a young man, because I know it was not easy for you. It was very difficult as a young boy.
Well, when I was at school, I was, when other kids were writing 4 or 5 lines in their notebooks, I was writing 15 pages and filling in the margins. So I wanted to write, and I wrote a lot of fiction. But somewhere between leaving school and becoming an adult, the realization of that didn't happen. I became a writer with nothing to write about, because I couldn't find an outlet for this writing and for this creativity. It triggered a lot of depression in my life, a lot of anxiety. Every time I tried to sit down, I'd got my condition in there, which said, not good enough, not you, not now, not ever. People like us don't write books. I had all of this very strong condition. I had the urge to write, but I didn't have the will to push through that conditioning. And then I got married very young, and this depression I had kept visiting me. It seemed to visit whenever it wanted to. It came in. It took over my life. It kicked down the front door. It parked itself in my front room, and it didn't leave until it was good and ready. And it always, always said, I will never leave you. I will always come back. So this threat that I could never get away from this. On the last depression I had, I was married, I'd got 3 children, and I'd be waking up at 4 in the morning in a cold sweat, long, long days. You're thinking, I don't know how I'm going to get through this day. A house full of people, but completely alone and sad and bereft. And on this last particular depression, I think it was the first time I spoke to my soul. And this rage came up in me and said, I'm just not having this anymore. I'm not having this. I'm not putting up with this. I've got a wife. I've got children. I've got a life. So what I decided to do, and this was really the beginning of my writing, I had this intuition which came directly from my soul. It said, write everything down that you're afraid of and let's go and confront them one by one. We'll get desensitization to the body chemistry of nothing else. So I drew a pyramid on a piece of paper. I wrote down everything I was afraid of, everything I could think of that I was afraid of, the least fear on the bottom rung of the pyramid, and the worst fear on the top level of the pyramid. And I systematically started to climb the pyramid and confront my fears. And the bottom end was a fear of spiders. And that probably sounds silly, but for me, if there was a spider in the corner of my room, I didn't sleep. And at the top end of the pyramid was a fear of violent confrontation. I mean, they seem very disparate, but I climbed the pyramid. On each fear I overcame, I got a bit more courage, a bit more knowledge. I got desensitization to the feelings. And I ended up at the very top of the pyramid, taken a job as a nightclub bouncer to overcome my fear of violent confrontation. I became a bouncer, and my first book was about that journey, about how I went from being a man who was frightened of a spider in the bath to a published author who was, you know, facing life and death situations on a nightly basis in one of the most violent clubs in Europe. And that was the first book I did, which was a Pandora's box, really, because every one of the other books and films and plays I've written in the last 25, 30 years have all come from ideas in that one book. And do you know where I wrote it? I was working in a factory sweeping floors, and I wrote it, and I would nip off every time I had a minute, and I would sit in the toilet, and I would write my, I wrote my first book on notepad in the toilet. So when people say that it's not possible, that we need the equipment, you believe me, you need very little to be creative. You just need a strong enough purpose.
Something to write with is what you need, and something to write on.
Yeah, that's right. I had a cheap Bic pen, and I had a cheap notepad, but I had an urge to tell stories. Shall I tell you what was the most important thing about this, Natalie? This is what I've learned from all the writing I've done. The most important element of this was, I remember thinking, when I was depressed, going and buying books and reading magazines and all of these tomes that I'd pick up that promised to give me the answer to why I was so afraid. And I recognized when I was reading the books that the people in the books were too afraid to tell the truth. So they dressed it up in a way that just didn't help. And I remember saying to myself, I remember vowing that when I find the truth, I'm going to tell everybody. I am going to tell everybody. And I didn't realize, but I triggered on one of the greatest secrets. And it came from the Torah, which is, the Torah is said to be the blueprint of the universe. And it was, the master always sets the table for the servant before he eats himself. In other words, he always thinks about other people. He always thinks about how he can serve other people and how he can present something to other people, or how he can draw down sustenance for other people before he thinks of himself. So it's the right side of the Kabbalic tree of life, which is we receive in order to give. And I triggered on that by accident, because I thought, look, there must be other people like me who are desperately sad, who are desperately, you know.
You're talking to one.
So that was where
one.
The first book comes
yes.
from.
Yes. Yes. I like that pyramid idea. I must try it. Fears. Let's get back to that quickly. You faced all your fears and you finally climbed to the top of that pyramid, and then what did you do? Crumble it up and throw it away?
Well, I realized that when I got to the top,
bounce it off the wall or something.
Oh,
here, take this. I'm done with you now.
Well, that's what you think, but of course it's an ongoing process. It's because I realized as I put the obvious fears on the pyramid, I started to recognize more subtle fears. I started to recognize that I was afraid of my wife. And that might sound silly, but I was afraid of any kind of marital conflict. I was afraid of my mother. My mom was beautiful, but she was a matriarch, and I was very afraid of her. I was afraid to live as a man.
Yeah.
So I started to subtly confront all those things. I was afraid of success. I was absolutely afraid of success, because what does success mean? I didn't even know what success was. I only knew that I didn't like change. I was afraid of change. And, of course, success is all about change, because one minute I'm working in a factory, the next minute I'm on national television, I'm one of the biggest talk shows in Britain, the next minute I'm on Sky News Live. The next minute they're doing documentaries about me. The next minute I'm in national newspapers. That's very frightening. That's what actually happened to me. I went from being this ordinary guy working in a factory who was quite anonymous to being very well known and in the public eye and having an opinion and saying to people, you can do this too. You might not want to be a writer, but you can overcome your fears and you can expand your consciousness and you can see the potential out there. So I started to have a pyramid that went up, but it also had high, but it also had depth. So So once I started to overcome, once I started to recognize all these more subtle fears, you know, I changed the job I was in. I was working in a, you know, I was working in a very menial job. I changed that. I became self-employed. I started teaching martial arts. I started writing. I gave up the day job. You know, when other people were doing their 10 hours a day in the factory, I was running down the street and doing my physical training. I was writing a new book, or I was on the radio talking to somebody, or I was sitting with a group of people.
Now,
that was my job.
Training, you know? Training is really good for the mind, isn't it? Doesn't it? It stimulates the endorphins. And I know when I ride my bike, and that's what I do, I feel so good. I put my headset on and I'm done, and I just feel so good. Did you find that too when you were teaching or training? Did you find that it really helped you to think better?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, other than the obvious, which is it oxygenates the brain, it sends blood and oxygen to the brain. The big thing for me was that it was the physical training, the discomfort of physical training was what enabled me to overcome the egoic part of me that wanted to just sit down and do nothing. The egoic part was just looking for comfort. It was looking for ease. So in order to subdue that, it's very important to get your food right, to discipline yourself, to train, so that you're in charge of this physical body. We often say we want to go and do things in the world. We want to change the world, but most people, you know, don't change their socks once a day. They can't discipline themselves with their own grooming. They can't, you know, they want to manage the world, but they can't manage their waistline. So it's kind of saying, well, let's do the first thing we need to do is forget about the world for a minute, and let's look at this small city, this beautiful, you know, multi-billion kind of cell, multi-trillion cell spaceship that we've got. Let's get some sovereignty over that. If we can get control over this through the palate, through the physical training, through the internal disciplines, once we've got control of this, we start to recognize that we have much more control of the world. We have much more of a say in the world. So it's in Buddhism, they would call it understanding the Dharma, you know, which is understanding the way the world works and understanding that the world out there is reflective of the world in here. So if I can get some kind of mastery over my physical and psychological and spiritual self, then I could, then I've got much more of a handle on the world out there, and I can start to locate my specific place in that Dharma, which is, what am I here to do? People might do 100 or 1,000 things, naturally. They might do a lot of things in their life, but they're only here to do one thing, and it's finding the way to do that. And normally we have to get past the ego, which doesn't want to do it, because the ego is very afraid of truth, because the ego is dissolved by truth, because, of course, truth contains divine essence.
You know, I'm listening to you, and I just resonate so much with all this. And I have a gentleman in the chat room right now, and he resonates with you also. And he is from the Whitsunday Islands, he said.
Yeah.
And he came the last time, last week, and I reminded him of the show. But, you know, I mean, talk about, don't you, oh, I have to, a thought came to me. Don't you have to forgive yourself also?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, well,
you know,
course,
I think that's important.
Yeah.
I've been on your site, the Forgiveness Project.
Yeah.
And, and what you do there, I mean, we'll talk about that. But we are so complex, aren't we? Think about it. I mean, we just, sometimes we can mix up everything, and then some days you can just see it right clear. Okay, I'm going to do this. You know, I guess I'm not that focused, I should say. Like when I do the magazine, I have a folder, I have a notepad. I see I'm writing anyways. I may not be writing a book, but I write everything, all the publicists down, all the contacts, and then one by one, I send them out something. Like, I'll send you something out again for August if you want to submit. I'll do that. And then as something comes in, that's, I'm going to put in, I'll put a check mark. Then when I put it in the magazine, I put a star. So I do have a little process going here. You know, I mean, I do have, I mean, if somebody saw my scribbling, they'd say, oh, my God, what is she doing? But, it, you know, really, it's not that difficult. And in a way, I guess I'm kind of like, organized, but maybe not organized sometimes. I don't know. But I'm just so impressed with everything that you've done. You came from nothing, and I don't want to say you were a nobody because that's not true, and you became a somebody. That's not true. I feel everybody is a somebody. And,
of course.
And so, you know, and sometimes I'll think, oh, you're a nobody from Nobodyville. I mean, I've said that before. I mean, I know I have. I mean, and that's silly. But I think you're right. If you can figure out your life, start with that pyramid. I love that. I mean, I was sitting there and you're talking about it. I'm thinking, I can think of things that I'm fearful of, not to the point where, oh, my God, I can't do that. You know, there are some things. Mm. But talking on the phone is not one of them. But, but say, for example, Jeff, if I had to stand on a stage, I mean, I had a motivator person come on, and he's been on like 3 times, and he said, I could get you on the stage. I said, oh, I don't know. I mean, I'd be petrified. I mean, how did you get control of that? Think of your first time somebody said, okay, you're going to be doing this here live or record. Filming is not so bad. Live is tough because live, don't you think? Isn't that worse than filming something?
Well, it's all a perception. So there's a perception that it's scarier. But what I've found is that, you know, to have the courage to go and stand and do a talk, which we all know is nerve-wracking, but you just got to have a strong enough purpose. And you've got to, for me, it's this vow I made when I was younger that I'm going to tell everybody. When I did my TED talk, I had a lot of resistance in me. But I recognized that that resistance was there because the part of me that didn't want to go and do the talk was going to be consumed in the act of doing the talk. So, of course, that old egoic part was fighting for its life. It didn't want to be noticed. It did not want to be noticed. So,
no,
for me, I
recognized
like me.
That. Yeah, that's like me. I stand behind the scenes. I like to be behind the scenes. I'll let everybody else do it.
Mm.
I'll help prepare.
And I've never been. That may very well be your thing. Mm.
Well, I very well think it is. I don't think I'd be good in front of people.
But what I mean is, it might your thing might not be to stand on the stage. Like my wife doesn't do public talks, but she supports me. She's a foundation for me. She's the other half of me. So when I go and do all the public talks, or when I do books, or when I do films, she's the one that stands with me. She supports me. But there's not, you know, her dharma isn't to do public talks. But she is much, even when she worked in a normal job, she was always behind the scenes. So the idea of finding your dharma, finding your purpose, is recognizing that, you know, like, for instance, you're doing the magazine and the radio show. I know already by looking at your site and listening to you, I know that you are saving souls. I know that you are capturing people. You are an intervention in people's lives through this facility to change and alter and save people's lives. So already, every single day, you are doing something vitally important.
If that's where you're strong,
it's good not to resist that. You know, and if you feel as though you need to tell your story, you know, then you can have a look at what it is that's blocking you. Because I listen to you talking, and I can already hear the book there, because you're like me. You like to talk. I just write
out.
Yeah,
you know,
talk.
It's funny. I get these people, authors will write back to me. And of course, Gavin, I know him pretty well just via email. But, you know what he'll say to me is, you are a star. You are making such a change. But, you know, I guess I am, but I don't feel like I am. I just feel like there's more I can do. Mm. However, I'm very comfy in what I do. I mean, I'm a stay-at-home person. I have 3 monitors. I have a nice big tower. I can do it all at one time. And that's another thing I can do, is multitask. So doing, and then I have another site also. I have Planet Stars, I have starpsychics.com, and I have the magazine. And doing the radio show, and you know what? I'm thinking back, and I'm letting everybody know, when I did the first radio show, I hated the thought of doing it. I got talked into it, and we just talked on it. I had a bunch of people with me. that worked for me and some didn't, and we just chatted, right? Well, that kind of broke the ice for me, and pretty soon I was doing topic discussions with a co-host, and she since passed away, and then something happened. Once she passed away, I couldn't do the show anymore. I just couldn't, and I didn't do anything for 3 months. But there was something gnawing at me, and somebody said, we really like to, one person said, not somebody, one person, I really like hearing your voice. You need to be on the radio. And then I was, a man that I knew brought me a ton of people to interview, but he interviewed me first. He said, we're going to do this. You're just going to answer and talk. And I did it. I used to do them on a Monday. Now I do them on a Wednesday. And it broke the ice, and I'm over 100 interviews now. I'm booked until October.
Wow, that's amazing.
But, you know, it wasn't like that in the beginning. So those of you that are listening, you have to understand, there must have been a calling for me to do this. I was supposed to do it. I always feel that way. I believe in the divine. I believe in God. That's it. Nobody can argue with me. And I always feel with God, anything is possible. But you have to believe. You have to have that light within inside of you, that spirituality that you want to do something. And I'm forever, and I do this, Jeff, every day. I talk to God, and I'll say, okay, what else do you want me to do? You got to give me some tools.
Yeah.
You got to open a door for me. Let me walk in a door. I'll try it. Now, I am on another radio show next week that I was invited to. Kind of shocked me. I'm going to have 20 minutes to talk about me and everything that I have and everything that I've done. I'm not even afraid because I'm so used to talking on my show, it's easy.
Yeah.
But in the beginning, it
you're
was
already
not.
There. Sounds to me as though you're already in your dharma. Sounds to me as though you're doing exactly what you need to be doing.
I think so too.
You don't need to be looking for something else. It's there.
Yeah, I think so too. I think you're right. I think I am of service. I mean, sometimes I find myself, and you probably do this too. I mean, although you're in a different place. I mean, I'm forever giving. Sometimes I'll stop and I'll say, okay, let's look back and see. Okay, what's Natalie getting here? You know, but I am getting a lot. I know people all over the world, all over.
Yeah.
I can contact any one of them, and I don't have to meet them either. I just talk to them on the phone.
Yeah,
so
it's
you're
very
right.
Beautiful, isn't it?
It really is,
yeah.
And makes me smile. You make me smile because I respect you. I really do. I mean, I looked at everything that you've done, and oh my God, you make my head spin. But then, you know, then if we start to talk about how we all get started and we take a step and then it leads us to another step, which is the synchronicity kind of thing. Oh, okay, I'm supposed to be over there. That's what it is. When I used to do my readings, I would tell everybody, you know, if a little door opens, peek through, peek around.
Yeah.
And if you don't like what you see, then don't open it all the way and walk in. Just close it. But open it. The gal that works for me, she said, "Oh, you could do television." Oh no, I couldn't do that either. Maybe they could do a slideshow of me, but I really don't think I could. I have no desire to do that.
I think the thing I've found is from my own life is that if God wants you to be doing something else, you will know.
Right.
And if he's not prompting you to do something else, then just immerse yourself into what you're doing and just continue to do what you're already doing. And if you need to go and do television, you'll be prompted. You'll be taken.
Right.
It's not really much different to radio. I mean, radio is more personal because you've got more time, but it sounds to me as though you're in exactly the right place. Often we find ourselves looking for something that we're already doing.
No, I stumbled into this, stumbled my way into it. Just like the magazine, you know. So let's go on with you. I don't want to talk about me on the hour. But, okay, so you were a bouncer, and you started writing in between your little time when you were at this menial job. But was there a point, your first book you did it take a long time?
Yeah. No, it took me I don't know, it probably took me a couple of months in my spare time. I wrote it. The stories just poured out. It was just one of the guys I worked with in the factory just said to me one day, because I used to tell him all the stories of all the weird and wonderful things that happened in the nightclub the night before. And he just said to me, you should write these stories down. He said, they're really good. And I just remember thinking, well, I've always wanted to write, so I'll do that. Now I've got something to write about. I'm a writer. There's something to write about. I'm very disciplined because of my martial arts background. I'm good at making myself stick to a task. So I got 3 pads from the store, and I got a couple of pens, and I sat and wrote all my stories. But my world was so small at that time, I didn't know anybody with a typewriter. And if you had a typewriter, you were posh. This was before computers. This was in 1988. No internet at the time. No computers, not widespread anyway. So I'd got this book written in 3 notepads, and I've still got the notepads here. And I said to my friend, he said, how are you getting on with your book? I said, well, I finished it a couple of months ago. I said, but I don't know how to get it typed. I don't know anybody with a typewriter. And he said, well, my sister's got a typewriter. She'll type it for you. So she typed it out. I ended up taking it to the local newspaper, and I asked them would they read it. They read it and said, you've really got something. Actually, the girl said to me, before I read this, she said, there are 15 reporters upstairs in this office, and all of them want to write a book, and none of them have yet. So she said, even before I read it, I've got to congratulate you because you have written a book. He said, you're already one step ahead of them. So she was very kind. She came back and she said, this is really good. You have a very strong voice. And she told me where I could improve it, how I could, you know, she said the description was very good. I just needed to add more. So I did that. I doubled the book. And then I started to try and find out how I could get it published. So this meant I had to educate myself about publishing, about, yep, you know, where the publishers were, how to approach them, what to present to them. So I got a book called The Writers and Artists Yearbook, and suddenly I had an access in this one book to every publisher in Britain. I had an open door to every publisher. So I just started to send the book out. But that was always there, Natalie. It was always there. All of that was there. The newspaper office, the girl who offered me the advice, all of the publishers, they were always there. I just didn't know how to find them. Had to expand my conscious net and bring into focus what was already there. So this was just, there's a lovely word in Islam called yaqeen, and it means certainty. It's actually one of the 99 names of Allah in the Quran, but it means certainty. And certainty has to be earned. So what they say is the truth is undeniably right in front of us. But we have to expand our conscious net by physically going out, like as you said earlier, and opening doors, peeping through and looking into rooms that are already there. We just don't know they're there. You'd be amazed at the potential for us as a species is incredible. But what stands between us and that potential is this knowing. In Judaism, they call it da'at. It means knowing. And knowing knowing comes from the process of a creative spark that we develop until we find a conclusion. So I just kept developing and developing all of these creative sparks I got until suddenly
you had
lots of sparks, I
want to tell you.
Oh, yeah. Well, I didn't know
how
to publish a book.
Fire.
I actually, I'm still on fire now. I was on fire. And
there's
sometimes
no stopping
I burnt
you.
Myself out.
There's no stopping
but it's all
you.
There.
Yeah.
Absolutely
so,
all there.
Okay,
it's
so
all
who
there.
Ended
it's all
up
there
publishing?
For everybody.
Who ended up publishing your first book?
A very small company called Summersdale Press. They were a new company. They were kind of a guerrilla company. They were very keen on interesting stories. Fundamentally, it was about the anecdotes of a nightclub bouncer. But what it was really about was a fearful man. It was about a man that was frightened, depressed, who had built a pyramid and climbed this pyramid of fears until he was able to stand on the nightclub door and, you know, monitor a violent environment and protect good people from the negative minority. So I wrote a book about that, and this hadn't been done before in this country. There was no genre for it. So we inadvertently created a new genre. So suddenly while I was still working as a bouncer and still working in the factory, I was going on talk shows with international stars. And even the PR people would say, How did you get on to this show? It's almost impossible to get on this show. I just said, well, I just kept ringing up until they got me on. I've got an interesting story.
There you go.
I want to tell it. Yeah. And that's what it's all about. That's what I love about
you,
because you do facilitate people's stories. Yeah, you're facilitating people's stories, though, Natalie. That's what you do. Your story as well, which is amazing. For me, I realized that my dharma was as Mandela said. I met one of Mandela's bodyguards in a very serendipitous meeting. And I said to him, what did Mandela say to you? He said, Chris, his name is Chris Lube. He said, Chris, to go out and tell our story. And that's what Chris Lube was telling me. So Nelson Mandela was speaking to Chris Lube to tell me, Jeff, you've only got one thing to do. Go out and tell your story. And that's what I do. That's what I continue to do. Because there's truth in my story. It's unique to me. It's got my fingerprint.
It sure is.
And maybe that's
what
you
need
to do, Natalie. Maybe you should tell your story. Maybe rather than look too quickly at the fiction, what's your story? You sound like you've got a fascinating story.
Tell
your story.
You mean about my childhood and my life and how I got where I am?
It's
a possibility.
People want stories.
It's a good story, but it's a sad story by the same token. But I look back and I look where I am right now and I'm thinking, well, obviously what I wasn't doing or did do back then brought me to where I am right now. So that's not too shabby.
Yeah.
It's funny. I don't have a great childhood, but it gave me the opportunity to read a lot because I was alone a lot. And I mean, it worked out okay for me. I mean, I didn't sit at home and cry or anything like that. My friends didn't come get me. Okay, well, I'll go and I'll read. And sometimes I would just sit there and daydream. Maybe I was meditating, but you see, I didn't know what it was. And I listened to my music or turned TV on, but I didn't miss a beat. In other words, it didn't ruin my day. And I didn't think about it. I was being shoved. Don't you do that. No, you are your own person. And my mother was a strong woman. You talked about a matriarch. That was my mother. My father was this quiet man. I was daddy's girl anyways, but I was so afraid of her. She'd be on my pyramid, I want to tell you.
She'd be up the top of
the
pyramid.
She'd probably be at the top. I mean, and I don't know why I was afraid of her. It was silly, you know, be afraid for what? Now I can say that. Then I was, if I thought I was doing something wrong, I was worried that she was, but I really never did anything wrong. I was a good little girl. I just, I think too, Jeff, like you, I've been listening to you, I think when we're really young, we develop things at our own speed, and then it all kind of like unfolds for you. You don't even have to think about it. It does. You know, I mean, I went to beauty school. I worked in a nursing home. I worked in a tennis club. But I was a facilitator, like you said. I was always taking care of. Taking care of. That's what I did, not as a little girl, but as I was a young woman. And what you're saying is making sense to me, and I'm hoping it does to everybody else, because it does make sense. It really, really does. So if you're not a facilitator...
What I would say to the people... Yeah. What I would say to people is... just be brave enough to tell your story. Just be brave enough to follow your story. Your job isn't to let the people around you edit your version of this story. People have passed on their story to you, your parents, your teachers, your peers. You know, that you know, the society around you. But now it's your job, and it's your job to edit it how you want. So you have to be brave enough to live the life that is already yours, not just to pick and mix of what other people think it should be. So it's
not
just having the courage
like my
to
fairy
do that.
Tale.
Well, you know, everyone's got a thing, but when I listen to you, I just think, you know, tell your story. I've worked on writers' groups with people who go off into areas of fantasy, not because, I'm not saying that those areas are wrong, because some people are made to do that, but often people go into fantasy because they don't want to sit on the nerve of the story that they really should tell. So my job as an instructor was to say to them, find the burn quickly, stay in the burn long. Like, that's where the power is. People want to hear about your truth.
Yeah, I know what I could write about. It would not be that hard for me. You're right.
Yeah. It's got to be unedited.
Some of it is painful for me. But sometimes when you tell a story and you explain, I mean, I could help a lot of people with it. I really could. My husband died of Alzheimer's. And I could tell you a story like you wouldn't believe. And
That's the story to write down, love.
Pardon me?
That's the story to write down.
Yeah, you know, it wasn't good. I mean, it wasn't great for me, but I did it. I did it. I mean, he wasn't in a home. He was here with me, and I was alone.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody was working. I mean, it wasn't that I was alone, but everybody was working, so it was my sole responsibility. And what I had to tolerate was unbelievable. But now when I think back, it's really helped to shape me, I think. I can have a really strong personality.
Yeah.
I always say to people, you don't want to go toe-to-toe with me, because I might be small, but don't let that fool you at all. I mean, I'm like that, you know. My development, I should talk to a psychiatrist or somebody that could say, well, I know what happened to you. But anyways, I could tell about that and my own life, the things that happened to me. But this other Alzheimer's thing would resonate with so many people. But you know what, Jeff? What's tough about it is I'd have to go back and go back into what happened. And maybe I'm just not ready to do that yet. I don't know.
Yeah, the writing is part of the healing process. The writing enables you to put it in a shape that you are able to get rid of the dissonance, so you're able to understand it, put it onto paper, and then you put that breath, that spirit out into the world. And other people will read that, and it will be the first time they've read something that says to them, you are not alone. Other people have felt this.
Yes.
Other people have suffered this.
Yes.
They're the kind of books that we need to tell. We're often so busy, all of us are often so busy trying to find the right story to tell that we don't want to look at the story we sat on, because the story we sat on frightens us. But that's a sure sign that it needs to be written. You know, I normally only write stuff that I'm afraid to send to the publisher. I'm afraid that my mum might see it. I'm afraid it might offend my friends, but I still write it. And I go to God. I just say, look, I'm going to do this because you've guided me.
Right.
But I can't do it on
my
own.
I'm going to need divine intervention. Yes.
Yeah. And then your book is an intercessionary book. Then your book meets people at an intercession in their life, and it can be transformative. I wrote that when I did my fear pyramid. I wrote a book called Fear, the Friend of Exceptional People. And I wrote all about this fear pyramid. So that's out there in the world now forever. So for anybody that's going through a troubling time, this will be a light in the dark. And it won't be a light in the dark because it's brilliantly written. It'll be a light in the dark because it is unapologetically true, honest, with all warts and all. I'm a brutally honest writer. I say the things that I haven't read other people saying because they're afraid to say them. We have to be brave enough to say them. The best thing we've got is our story. And if you want to write, and you are a natural writer, because I can tell just by listening to you talk, just don't try to write. Write in the way you're talking to me. People don't listen to your radio station because you can't talk. They listen to your radio station because you talk beautifully. And your writing would be the same.
Thank you. I feel exactly the same. So honored with that. I mean, I have people say, yeah, I think I have a whiny voice. I don't like my voice. But my son listens to me.
You've got a beautiful voice.
Thank you. He said, Mother, sit down and be quiet. I'm going to tell you something. Okay. I listen to your show because it's on. I have it on YouTube, one of them. All of yours, this one's going to be on there too. And he said, and I have heard this before, you don't go, like, he said, it's a continuous talk. You just flow. You pull out information. He said, where do you get it? I said, well, I have content that I can look at. I read it, but it's in my head. I don't sit and read or all these questions. I don't do that. I just talk. Mm. He said, Mother, you found your niche. This is it. He says, so stop telling me about your voice. You have a beautiful voice. My best friend, and when she's passed, she told me the same thing. Oh, it's not whiny, but we don't like our voices, do we? Why is that? I don't know. I don't know. I just thought of another fear, and the fear was my husband.
Yeah?
I feared him. There you
go. Did ya?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Wow.
He was...
You know that lovely saying, we're only as sick as our secrets. So when you share it with somebody, the sickness starts to heal, doesn't it?
But see, I ended up taking care of him. You see what happened?
Yeah.
He was a strong personality. He was bossy. He ordered me around. Mm. But I was just this dumb. I wasn't dumb. Girls are just getting married, having babies, staying at home, blah, blah, blah. I mean, I was even a hairdresser. I did that. I've had so many of service jobs. You could write about that. And I think it's really kind of strange. I ended up taking care of him, but it wasn't fun. He was mean. He was really mean. And what happened with him, and the neurologist told me, he said oftentimes, whatever their personality is, sometimes they're real calm and a drug will help them to be calm. Sometimes there isn't anything in the world that's going to help a person with a disorder like this. It's not going to work unless we knock them out. And nothing worked. Nothing worked. And so I did it, I guess, for about a year. But when I look back, I mean, when I was going through all of it, I didn't have a radio show. I still did my magazine. I didn't have the other side stars. I mean, it was in development. It was little steps, but I know what I did for him did not go unnoticed. I know God looked down at me and said, okay, this is the girl. Look at her. Look what she's doing.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. I did a good job. And I did. I know I did, Jeff. It was... you're right. I should start writing about my story, and then I can do the that's the big one actually. That's the one that would be really good for a lot of people. What I went through and I came out of it. Look what I'm doing.
Yeah, I mean it's a very inspirational story.
Thank you. You make me feel so good. One day I would love to meet you and your lovely wife. And your three children.
Beautiful. Well, I've got four. My youngest is 31. Yeah, my youngest is 31, and my oldest is 42. They're beautiful kids. They're really good kids.
I just have one son, and he is... I couldn't have asked for anything more. You know, he... because of... Well, you have it there, too, because of this virus thing. Mom, you're not going out. No, you can go outside. You're not going anywhere. I mean, I had to have some oral surgery done, so I did that. I had two appointments. And then what else did I have to do? I went to my cardiologist. That was a yearly thing that I always do. And I went to the grocery store one time, a Monday, and it was awful. I'm not going back. I wasn't feeling good that day anyways. And my son said to me, well, he stood in the parking lot, and he said, we can look at it this way. You're alive and well. He said, see, he's just the best to me. I said, if I could find a man like you, oh, my God. I grab him and run. But you know, I'm a lot to handle. he'll say to me, he doesn't go toe-to-toe with me, though, because he knows. He knows I'm very spiritual. I do have feelings. I can get hurt. But I probably should do an audio book. Maybe I should do an audio book.
I think you should come, first of all, you should come to the place where you're most afraid. And at the moment, that's writing this book. If you wasn't afraid of it, you would have done it. So I would say come to that first. And you can always get assistance with it. But I would say if you write as you talk, the writing will be great. And write about the stuff that is most difficult for you to look at, because that's how you'll clean it. And that will be of service to other people, because the things you don't want to look at are the things they don't want to look at.
Right.
Somebody has to be brave. Somebody has to be first. So you tell the stories that are uniquely yours, and you will find that they will resonate with people. And then you can do it as an audio book afterwards.
Yeah. I had an author
God
talk
to
me.
To go
she
the
came
easy
one of my
route.
Good
she friends.
She said, "Yeah." She said the thing with you is, she says you talk fast sometimes. She says so you probably should record everything, but I retain it all. So I you're right. You're absolutely right. I just need to start thinking about it and then just write. Don't even think. Just write.
Yeah.
Write. Write
just
about
sit down.
It. Write about your encounters. Write how your life began and carried you through.
Yeah.
To where you are, and you know, I never thought of myself as a success story, but I really am. I am.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I went through hell, but a lot of people have. But what the thing of it is they have to come out from the other side. They have, you know, they have to walk through it, and then come to the other side. Then you can look back and say, okay, I did that. But you know what? I'm going to tell you something, Jeff. I knew I didn't know when the end was near, but I mean, we kind of had a hunch. I think God just said, and you can see he had his angels, archangels with him, and said, okay, she's had enough. This is enough. She's done it all.
Yeah.
She's done enough. It's time for him to go. I really think that was it. I wasn't upset. I wasn't this little, you know, tiny little thing walking around like, oh, woe is me. No, but that was it. And I tell the story about seeing Jesus. And, I mean, I've had a lot of presence
in my life. Tell me that story. I'd love to hear that.
Okay, well, during this time that I was taking care of him, I mean, it got to be really bad. I cried all the time. I'd have to go and lock the doors. Because, see, he would come after me. He would try to hurt me. You could see a look in his eyes. Sometimes he'd come running at me and throw me. This is no joke. But I never got hurt once. Never got hurt. And so I locked myself into the bathroom, and I could hear him pounding. And I sat on the floor, and I just put my head down, and I thought, I just don't know how much more I can take of this. I felt alone, but I wasn't afraid. I was more afraid of him. I had to be careful. I couldn't retaliate because he would have killed me. There's just no doubt in my mind. If I would have tried to threaten him with something, he was too big. There was no way I was going to stop him. So I was sitting on the floor, and I kind of looked over to the side, and I saw some bare feet. I saw bare feet and bottom of a white robe. And it was almost like I recognized what it was, who it was. I stopped crying. I got up. I opened the door and went back to what I was supposed to do. I believe it was Jesus.
Wow.
He knew.
Wow.
And I think he knew. I feel that I was with Jesus when he was on the cross. I feel I tried to help him, but he told me no.
Yeah.
Because you can hear with me. People follow me. Oh, no, well, I'm going to gather everybody. I'm going to just go and get everybody. We're going to stop this. But he said, no. I'm doing this for all of you.
Yeah.
And someday I would like to go there where he walked. It's very important to me. All of that has been very important. But he came to me in a dream. But this real thing I really saw, I mean, I don't think I ever felt any better than I did at that moment that I could handle it all.
That's a miracle.
Well, I don't know if it was a miracle. It was divine order.
What else is it? To see that. That's
well, something,
a miracle.
It's true because if you can't explain it,
it's
miraculous.
Yeah,
you're right.
Yeah. But you don't need to be afraid of saying you had a miracle. That doesn't get any better than that for me. I'd borrow that book. I would buy your book, Natalie.
Oh, you're so sweet. Now, we have to talk before our time isn't up. We still have time. I want to talk about your book. But, you know, see, this is what I love. I get to talk to you like you're a person, like I've known you for a long time, and I'm not afraid to answer questions, and I'm pulling stuff out. Tell us about the Divine CEO. I want to know about that.
Well, the Divine CEO is about connecting to our higher soul. The Divine CEO is the soul, and it's about how we clean our body up, clean our life up, like the stuff we were talking about, you know, overcome our fears in order that we can connect to our higher soul. When we connect to our higher soul, we are shown our purpose. So this book is a no-nonsense, kind of very hard-hitting book about how we do that. So it's a kind of asks a lot of people, because it's saying, look, you know, you want to change the world, you've got to start by changing yourself. You know, you want to understand the miraculous, but you're still afraid of the mundane. You know, you want to do divine things, but you're still struggling to do ordinary things. So it's kind of saying, let's get this projector beautiful so that we can project the light of God, the light of our divinity, onto the screen of the world. So this is a book about how to develop your divine hierarchy by getting your palate right, by getting your psychology right, by getting your physiology right, and by doing, you know, by cleaning up all of the mess up. You know, all of us are carrying around lots of things that we'd rather not have thought or said or done. And it's about looking at how to repent them. And I mean, when I say repent, I mean it in the sense of how it really is, which repent means to return. So some of us fall out of alignment with God. This is about how to return to alignment. So repent means to return. It means to look at the mistakes we've made and own them and then stop doing them. That's how we call it a burnt offering. A burnt offering is always a sin offering. So we clean up ourselves rather than project into the world and look at what everybody else is doing wrong and how you could do it better. We basically take our clothes off, look in the mirror and say, okay, this is my world, this is my reality. Let me start by using my divine power to get this so that it is a beautiful tabernacle, a beautiful vessel, so that I can be a clean vessel for the light of the divinity or the light of God. So it's really about the muscular way to develop that hierarchy. And it comes from hard experience. I am a man that has made a lot of mistakes. I'm a man, at some periods in my life when I fell out of alignment, you would have thought there was no redemption for me. But through this method of turning back and returning to God or finding refuge in God, I've been able to do the work, clean everything up, and just be a vessel for the word, just be a vessel for the books are right, the plays are right, the talks I do. And that's what it's about. That's what the whole book is about. It's about connecting what they call the animal soul or the ego to the higher soul. It's about getting sovereignty back over this body, over this mind, over your reality, and then creating from a divine place. I'm an ordinary person, but I live an extraordinary life. And I'm no different to anybody else. All I'm doing is I'm exploring, I'm curious. And if I want to know how to do something and I'm not sure, I sincerely ask God in my prayers. I'll go to my highest self and I'll ask for guidance. Mm-hmm. And the guidance always comes. And then my job...
You'll get your answers.
Earlier,
yep.
It's to go through the door. If he gives me a door, then I go through it.
You like my door theory. I like that. That's a cool thing.
I love it, yeah.
I was an astrologer. Yeah. I mean, I've done so many things I can't even imagine anymore now. I have to list them down, but it was all part of my development. Pardon me?
I'm dying for your book. I'm dying to read your book. You're going to write a great book.
I have a lady that's listening who's known me for all over 20 years probably. She listens to all the shows, and she's probably nodding her head. She always tells me, I've never known anybody like you. You start something and you do it, and you're successful.
Yeah.
She's always encouraging me, to do things, and she works for me on my one site. But I'm sure she's probably sitting there. She's going to say something to me when the show's over. She's going to laugh and say, "See, yeah. I told you." But when I was sitting here listening to you, and I'm thinking, God, I know so many publishers.
Yeah.
I do.
And what I always say,
I go to O Books.
O Books are great, yeah.
Gavin, I work with, he sends me, I can't even tell you how many people, and he wanted me to interview you. And he said, I just know this is going to be a beautiful conversation. And but part of it was, is I love the name of your book.
Yeah,
divine,
thank you.
CEO. I'm a CEO, and the word divine,
yeah.
I mean, I just gravitated, and that's why I wanted to know more.
That's great.
See,
I'm
that's
so
what
pleased
you
got me on. I'm grateful.
Yeah, it's,
I'm very
it's,
grateful. Thank you.
Oh, no, I'm grateful. I'm honored. I mean, listen to this conversation. I wouldn't mind listening to it again, and I'm going to have my son listen to it because you're renowned, but you would never know. You would never know that you've done a film. You have your what is it called, an IMDb or whatever it is for films.
Oh, the IMDb page, yeah.
Yeah, you know, you're there. I mean, see, when I have a guest on, well, I knew right away because of what Gavin sent me. I wanted to know more, and I knew this is just not some person who wrote one book. This is somebody else. And I said to Jackie today, I've never had anybody on my show that has a Wikipedia page. Never. We started to do mine, and we never finished it. Now I'm going to say this. When I finish my book, then I can do it, because then I will be an author, right? You know, but I'm going to take your advice, and I'm going to just write like I think. I'm going to go back and just, you know what I'm saying? Just don't analyze it.
Yeah.
Just write it.
What I always say, Natalie, is, I talk to a lot of people who are out there serving, and they'll say, I don't know whether I should do this, I don't know whether I should do that. And I said, I don't have that conversation. I just ask God what he wants me to do. So I don't ask God. I don't say, I want to write this and I want to do that. I just say, what does God want me to write? And I think God's telling us through this conversation what he wants you to write. So it's never, when it's about us, if I think about what I want to write and if I want to win an award or do all that, I make everything very small. But if I just listen to my intuition, God will guide me towards the thing it might not be the thing I want to write, but it'll be the thing I need to write. So he will guide me towards what I need to write. So I just go straight to him. And to me, listening to you, the story about your husband, and that's very powerful. And I already know it would serve a lot of people, because there's a lot of people suffering in silence because they're too embarrassed or too ashamed to talk about how they feel, you know, all the stuff you've shared with us today. But and if there is a lot of resistance, you know there's going to be a big reward. The things that we need to do always offer a lot of resistance, but the resistance is necessary. It's a part of the process, because that resistance will be consumed as fuel. It will be the bricks and mortar of what we build. So when we write a book, the resistance goes into it and is transmuted into the book. So if there's a lot of resistance when you sit down to write, you know you're in the right place.
Yeah, I never thought of it that way. I really never thought, but I've never talked to anybody as successful of a writer as you, that your words really resonate with me. She just typed to me, she said, I told you. She'd write something because she's listening. I told you. You know, and she said about my one business is not doing as good as it was. She said, you'll come up with something. She says, you'll come up with something. Well, I started my magazine in 1999. My first site was 1998. And this other one I did 8.5 years ago. I think I'm done with sites, I think. But I want I want to do something. I want everybody to benefit, like, you know. And I there, sometimes when I'm on Instagram, you know, I'll see this one lady. We have talked and messaged each other. Her mother had Alzheimer's, and she finally passed. And I wrote her a little something. You know that she talks to me all the time. She, you know, I'll ask her, how are you doing? You know, you're going to have. But see, that was different. A mother is different than a husband. It really is. That's another thing I'd have in the book. It's completely different. It is completely different. You expect mother and father to go through this, something. Now, you know, my husband was a teacher. He was brilliant. But there was a part, and the neurologist told me, he says, there was a part of him, I don't want to say he had a screw loose, but he said there was something there that happened way back. There was symptoms with him because of the way he turned out. And he said, but you took it as his temper. But he said it wasn't really his temper. It was signs. So he probably had it a really long time. And, you know, but, oh, my gosh, I have enjoyed this so, so much. And I want to tell everybody about, but, and that makes me feel even better, see, because it, you like to hear that. You know, when an author says that, like I said, you've written all these books, and, oh, my goodness, your site is called The Forgiveness Project. .com.
But that's not, it's not actually my, that's not my site, but I am on that site. The Forgiveness Project is the site that I'm on. But you can, they can get me on, I have an Instagram page, which is Jeff_Thompson_official.
Okay, well, I'm gonna follow you as soon as we get off the phone.
And if you send me a link, I'll put it on my Instagram. I would love to put a link to this on the Instagram if you could send it to me. I'd really love talking to you.
Yeah, I will. I can do it as we're talking. I'm that good. I can talk and walk, and I can type. I can do all of this at one time. When I worked in the tennis club, listen to this. When I worked in the tennis club, this guy was at the desk, right? He was a young guy, you know. And he was standing in the doorway of my office, and I said, what are you doing, Jason? He said, I'm watching you type. He says, if I could shift as fast as you type, oh, my, he said, would I be barreling down the road. I said, well, yeah. But when you start doing something when you're really young, I used to do typing for everybody. I could have typed for you. I could have done your paper, your book.
That would have been nice.
Yeah. Okay, so your Instagram, and I'm going to go there right now while we're on the phone, so I don't miss a beat here because we have time. After all, it's my show, right? This is a corporate move here, corporate move. Okay, it is Jeff_, right?
Underscore, yeah.
Underscore Oz? O-Z? No, that's not you.
No, it's _THOM.
THOMPSON, right?
Underscore.
Official, there you are.
Official, yeah.
I got it.
Great.
I'm following you right now. And periodically I'll send you a little heart. Oh, you know, talking about Alzheimer's, there's this man that I met through my goddaughter who walks every day for the Alzheimer's Association. And we kind of go back and forth. I'll send him a heart, three hearts or something, and he always says to me, he says, you honor me every day by doing that. And I did tell him in the very beginning what happened. And this man, I always tell him he's a great man. He said, why do you say that? I said, because you are. I know you are. I have to type it. If I could talk to him, I could tell him. And then that lady whose mother passed away, two people that I've touched, because I know what it's like. I know what it's like. And I'm going to send you a little message. I'm going to put a heart there. I have enjoyed this. You just can't imagine how much. It's filled my heart. It really has.
Thank you, Natalie. Thank you.
Oh, yes. And you'll be one of the first to buy a book.
I'm going to
write to Gavin. Be ready.
I'm going to take credit for it. I'm going to say it was my idea. I told her to write.
It was your idea. You can take credit. Okay. He's going to take credit. There's nothing I can do. I'm not going to argue with him. He's got a lot more expertise in the area than me, right?
It'd be great if you did write. I'd love it.
Yes, I know. We will do this again, okay?
Lovely.
I want to talk to you again. Maybe in the fall, okay? November, something like
Lovely.
That.
Lovely, okay.
Oh,
well,
yes,
I've got a
absolutely.
New book coming out in September, so another book
Ooh,
in September.
Okay.
So if you want to talk to me then.
Now, what is that one called?
It's called Notes from a Factory Floor. Notes from a Factory Floor.
Oh.
That's out in September. So
okay.
Email me closer to the time, and I'll get the publisher to send you a PDF, and you can have a look at it, and we can talk
awesome.
Again.
Yes, you know I will. And then I'll have to bug Gavin to send me the book, you know. He's sending me two books right now, and, of course, it's coming from, you know, the UK. So he says, I don't know how long it's going to take, weeks probably. I said, well, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it.
Well, this other book,
I have
this other
the
book
internet.
Is with a different publisher.
I can find
publisher.
Out anything. And
well,
I love it.
This other book
I
is with
it.
A different publisher, so I'll get you a copy of that sent.
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay. I have another question, though. How
yeah.
you went to the first publisher, and then what did you do? How did you find... You haven't always been with O Books, right? You were with somebody else before?
No, I've been with a lot of different places. I mean, I went with Summersdale for my first few books, and then I learned how to become a publisher myself, and
oh,
I started to publish all my own books. And then we published internationally. We published in about 21 languages. So I was still working with Summersdale. I was publishing some of my own stuff. Some of the stuff I was publishing with other companies as well. Then I started to do films and plays and stuff like that. So it's kind of been very, very varied. So I just really learned how the industry worked, and I started to find my way around it. So it just went from one very small book with a small publisher to eventually getting onto the Sunday Times bestseller list and winning a BAFTA. And we had a musical on last year as well. So
yeah, I told you. I mean, you're just high up there on the rung. Best.
But it's started from very small things.
Oh, my God. I'm so honored. I'm just smiling from ear to ear. You just made my day so beautiful, really.
Thank you. Thank
really.
You, actually.
Okay, so, all right, we've got all the information. If you want to find anything else about him, just email me at stars@mysticlivingtoday.com, and I can direct you and tell you what's going on. And you will be hearing from me, Jeff, okay?
Lovely. Thank you.
Okay.
And if anybody, if anybody wants to contact me, they tell them just to do it through the Instagram. You know, if they want to look at the stuff
yes.
I'm doing, go on to the Instagram
yes.
page. We've got a girl that manages the page for me, so she looks after everything from Gabriella.
Okay. I'm going to put your Instagram. I'm going to go back in my and edit in the page that you did because you sent, I think it was an article or an excerpt. I'm going to put your Instagram there so people can find you there, too.
Oh, thank you. That would be a big help. Thank you.
Well, I just followed you. I put three hearts.
Oh,
three
lovely.
Hearts
thank
means
you.
You're really special, you know. More than one. You got three of them. You got three of them. Thank you so much. Have a good evening.
You.
I know it's, what, about nine-ish after nine there, right?
Yeah, it's about 8:15 now.
Oh, okay. All right, good. All right. And we will do this again,
I
promise, okay?
Lovely. Thanks, Natalie.
Okay, talk to you soon. Bye-bye. Okay, everybody, as always, I always end the show, and you might want to hear this, Jeff, and it is believe in things you cannot see because they really are there. And that's probably how I would end my book, Jeff, is by putting that.
Yeah.
I've said this
that's
for
beautiful.
Years. Thank you. And thank you. I mean, I want everybody to listen to this. Now, what's going to happen is I'm going to push this out to Twitter, and then Candy will run with it. And then when it becomes a live video on my YouTube channel, I'll make sure that you get a link, and because then they can hear you right there. They can hear you on Blog Talk Radio, but this is my own. I mean, you know, it's my way of promoting everything that I do, everything that I own. And my webmaster thought it would be a good idea. He said, you know what he said to me? He said, you know, Natalie, he said, I think we should start pushing you. I said, why? I don't know. You know, the other side is we've got great competition. He said, what competition do they have? What competition do you have? Tell me. I said, well, I don't know. Exactly, he said. Nobody can do what you do. Nobody. So I call everybody my champions, from the lady that's listening, has listened to every show, and Candy. And we had a guest in the chat room. His name is Bob, and I'm going to be putting in his story. He has been listening, and I invited him on Facebook Messenger. And I want to thank him. Thank everybody. Be grateful. Be safe, everybody. Now we'll be back to regular time next week. I believe I got to look on my list. Yes, I think so. Yes, the lady's been with me before, but yes, we'll be doing this again. Okay, Jeff, have a great evening, and I will talk to you soon. Goodbye, everybody. Have a great week, and be safe, and be smart. Okay? Bye.
Bye.
If everyone could be who they were really meant to be, without limitation, discrimination, this world could show all its colors. So get the chip off the shoulder.
Put your heart